Validas Tour and Library Qualification Podcast with your host, Oskar Szotos.
Hello, my name is Oskar Szotos and I'm your expert in tool qualification and library qualification. Today we are talking about profiling to measure time within library qualification. I'm very happy to have a guest today. It's Masud Asadi. Masud, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, yeah, thank you, Masud, for being here. Can you please introduce yourself? So you are quite new at Validas. What have you doing before? What are you doing now?
Yeah, and I was used to work in Switzerland with my wife, actually, in the University of Lugano in a verification laboratory. And I was doing C++ programming mainly, and helping with various tasks and implementation of new ideas and the algorithm introduced by researcher, postdoc researcher, and also PhD researcher. And I was fortunate enough to work with my wife at the same location. And after 2 years, we relocate to here in Validas, which again, I'm very happy that I'm working here with nice and knowledgeable people.
Yeah, including your wife. That's a great thing to have you both on the team. So it's a pleasure to work.
Thank you. And here I'm working on library qualification, mainly, analyzing C++ and writing test cases.
Yeah, let's introduce into the topic today. Today we are talking about profiling and worst case execution time. And profiling means to measure the time that a computer spends within during execution, so we can just measure it. And worst case execution time is the making some analysis, more or less formal, to determine the longest time the computer can take to compute some things. That's important to have guarantees. If a system is crashing, the airbag needs to be there within some milliseconds, and therefore it's very important to know the worst case execution time of these algorithms inside. Yeah, and that's why we are interested in profiling data and approaches, because we want to know how fast our programs are executed, how much time it takes to run them on the hardware. But before digging into this, I'd like to give our listeners a bit of introduction into the safety requirements and resource usage. So, as I have mentioned, the airbag example shows that it is critical to determine the resource usage, how it's called in the safety standards. So resources are typically memory, but also time. Time is a resource. And if the safety standards is talking about resource usage, then they mean how much time do we need, how much processor time, how much real time, how much memory do we need? Do we need other resources like threads or other things? All these is resource usage. And within the safety standard, it's written in the library qualification chapter, for example, from ISO 26282812. It is written that the specification of the library shall, of course, include the functional specification, so what the functions are doing, but also the resource specification. So how many resources are they allowed to take? Is it a function which computes a result in a constant time, in a logarithmic time, in a linear time, whatever timing usages are there? And we should specify this together with the library. And then during verification or testing of the library, we should test this. So that is mandatory for the library qualification. Yeah, to be more precise, section 8.12 says for the specification, we should specify the response time, the resource usage, the requirements on the runtime environment, and the behavior in an overloaded situation. So this is called robustness in ISO 262. It's part of 12.4.2 specification of software component qualification. So we need to qualify the component not only for functional behavior, but also for these resources. Yeah, so not only the section about library qualification, so part 8, 12 is about resources, but also, of course, for the software. And the software resource usage cannot be done on the unit level, or typically isn't done on the unit level, but is on the integration, where you integrate the software with the hardware. And there are the methods described that are have to be used. And the resource usage evaluation is a highly recommended method for all ASILs. So if you want to test your software in the target, you have to do the resource usage evaluation, which means profiling for time and memory and other relevant things. Yeah, that's the safety requirements. And of course, if we want to qualify a library, then we can just run a test suite over it and say it's working correctly. But this is not fully compliant with the safety standards. So safety standards say you should test the resource usage too. And of course, we can leave this to the customer, which are using the libraries. But having a library qualification kit that is able to determine resource usage on the hardware is a good thing, and will enrich our product to make it more powerful even. And that's why we are considering to not only test the functional behavior of the libraries, but also the resource usage. Yeah, now let's come to the different profiling tests that we can perform. So we have a C++ library, we have many functions, and we want to get the timing data and on how fast they are. And of course, this is not a worst case analysis, as we said, worst case execution time, but we can just measure it and then add up the time and see how we are, how fast the system is running, and how long it takes at the fastest time or in the medium time or in the worst case time that we have observed. So we do this kind of profiling test. And we have decided to go not to a debug interface, but to use an instrumentation-based approach. And we'll compare it with a debug in channel debug interface, and then see how realistic our measurements are.
Okay, Oscar. Before getting into different approach that we actually experimented for application profiling here, could you give us some introduction on a basic definition here?
Yes, of course, I like to. And well, there are different notions of time. Initially, I have explained the difference between worst case execution time, and but it's not only worst case execution time, but also worst case CPU time. So where's the difference? So the execution time measures from the first point where the function is started until the end time where it's finished. And this is including any interrupts and any other things. So this is really the worst case it can take in milliseconds, that it can take from begin to the end, and it can take a minute or whatever. So it's really very likely that the operating system will break it. And the worst case CPU time, so if the program is deterministic, it will very likely have similar CPU times. So depending on different hardware variants and caching strategies, of course. But the worst case CPU time is just, let's say, if you would pay for the CPU usage, that would be the time you will be charged for. So you will pay for the seconds of the CPU where you really have been computing, and not paying for the time where you have been waiting while others are computing. So that's the difference between CPU time and execution time. You have both the worst case time and usage time you have in the you are interested in. And of course, the worst case, the execution time depends on the load. So if you are have complete control over the CPU, no interrupts, nothing, then the execution time is like the CPU time. But usually in normal systems, modern systems, this isn't the case, and you have always some interrupts occurring and maybe some other processes running, and it depends on the load of the system how long it will take.
So what approaches are available actually here to measure time?
Yeah, this depends of course on the hardware that we have, and there are some standardized interfaces that can be used to measure time. And typically, standardized interfaces are not so accurate because they are working on all the different architectures. So therefore, it's and you can measure. Let's say, for example, you have the sleep command, which sleeps a second or two. Or you can say sleep, and then it will sleep some seconds. But it isn't. You cannot sleep for nanoseconds with this command. So that's a very broadly used, but very inaccurate things. And when we want to measure time, then we are interested in milliseconds and microseconds and nanoseconds. But that's also hard to measure. And the best thing is to go to the system clock. So this is a clock that is really ticking. And then we count the system clock cycles. So we are speaking about cycles because after every machine opcode, there is a cycle. And then this, when the cycle is completed, the next one starts. So you are counting the operations of the CPU. Some operations take several cycles, so then they are more complex operations. But having access to these cycles is a very accurate measurement. And of course, to convert it to time, we need to know how many ticks or cycles can be performed, or how many nanoseconds every tick or cycle takes. And that's, of course, important to measure. Yeah, and of course, we have also noise, so it might take the time when the system processes an interrupt. So then this will, when we don't subtract the time where we are not computing, we have very inaccurate timings. And we might, for example, if the system load is high, it might take much longer than if the system time load is low. But that's something we are interested in. Yeah, and of course, there are a lot of things that impact the time measurement. So caches, branch prediction is something. We have observed that our tests are initially running, and after some iterations, the branch prediction has understood how our test cases are executed, and then they get faster. So this is a very interesting effect that we already observed using the first experiments. Yeah, but maybe, Masoud, you can tell us more about the different approaches that we have been, or you have been using when measuring time and their results.
Yeah, we already actually experimented like two approach. The first one was the statistical sample profiling, which is in this approach, the samples that the program execution periodically would build, and it would build a statistical model of its performance. And this technique, we don't have require any special hardware or software.
So how does it work? So,
yeah. It's actually in this technique, the samples that the program execution periodically to build a statistical model of its performance. And some operating system would provide some, you know, profiling library that in this approach we could actually instrument the binary during compilation time. And then we would run the program on the targets, and then we would collect the results, and then we would go for post-processing to analyze our data. And the second approach that we used was...
Before we go to the second approach, let me first understand. So this is somehow the operating system is creating data, how long it took to run a complete application. So let's say I have a small Hello World program, and then it says, okay, you're running it, and it took 5 milliseconds to execute and to print it. And this is the data that is produced from this statistical thing and then just done several times, or how does it work? Is it on the level of complete executables, or is it on the level of within the software of functions and statements and things like that?
I think it's in the level of complete execution.
Ah, okay. Then I understand the approach. But is it very difficult to have a measurement? Let's say if we have the size function of the vector, then we first need to create a vector, then we call the size function, and then we terminate the program and or print the value and terminate. So it will take quite long, and we won't get real realistic data,
yes,
don't we?
True.
And what is the second approach you were talking about?
Yeah, and the second approach that we actually used was we actually built a module. We used function instrumentation, actually, which is the process of adding some code, which GCC would enable us to do, actually, to put some hook in the beginning and the exit of each function. We used actually some API, which some operating system would provide to get the precise clock cycle. And then it would collect all this information about the execution of specific functions. And this information can then be, you know, used to analyze and identify the performance bottleneck or for debug issues and to optimize the program, yes.
So that's very interesting. So is it true that the GCC compiler has the ability to insert functions, hook functions that we can program ourselves after each program was called and before it's exited, every function?
Yeah, true.
That's a cool feature. Yeah, we can make a lot of with that, and of course you probably didn't print it out to the console the start and end time, so you had to store it somewhere in the memory. Is this true?
Yeah, exactly. We would store it in the memory, and while the program was about to terminate, then dump all this information into a file so we could use it as for our post-processing, you know, performance analyzing.
Okay, that's interesting. What kind of post-processing did you do? How can you visualize the time, or what kind of data we get out of it?
Yeah, in here, as I told you, we would use some API to directly get the CPU tick in the beginning of each function, and then at the end of each function again, we would take the CPU, and elapsed CPU tick here would be the, you know, the CPU tick that is checked in the exit of each function minus CPU tick that is checked in the beginning of each function. And then, as you know, because using these GCC option, which is, let's name it, a F instrument function, which would enable you to put, you know, hooks in the beginning and end of each function. It's just, you know, the argument of this function is function pointer. So you need to be able to do the mangling and demangling for the whole call tree of each C++ standard function. So yeah, all these operation should, I mean, we did it as a post-processing operation.
Mazo, just out of curiosity, it takes time to store the timing information. Can you also measure and subtract this, or is it something which is not possible?
Yes, it's absolutely possible, because we actually, for the sake of, you know, to minimize the noises, we would store all this information about CPU tick within a in-memory data structure, a map, okay? So putting, even inserting this information, this CPU tick information into the map would take time.
Very interesting. So that is really cool. So now let's come to the post-processing. So I think the most important information is how long did the function take to compute within the function code, and maybe also together with all the sub-functions. So of course, if I have a, for example, if I have a function that adds an element to a vector, this can take very long, but maybe 99% the allocator from which allocates memory is called. So therefore, I think we are interested in the two time informations. One, how long was this function active, excluding all the children, and how long was this function active, including all the children. So can you measure this during post-processing and get information out of it?
Yeah, absolutely. Because we are just putting some, you know, constant data type here within the map, let's say CPU tick, which is a double type, or function pointer, which again is a double type, then we could have also these CPU tick measurement for putting a double data type into a map for, let's say, 1,000 time, and then it would take an average from how much it would take, for instance, to insert a double into a map, and then we could subtract these amount from the real CPU time measured to minimize the noises.
So you can do this not only for a single function, but also for the complete function tree. So this is really cool.
Yes, absolutely. We could actually build some mechanism in order to keep track of the depth of the call tree, and by knowing when actually exactly we entered a specific function or helper function in the call tree of a C++ standard function, and knowing when exactly we exited from that function, then we could, you know, subtract all this helper function from outer, you know.
If I have understood you correctly, Masud, you can record for every function when you enter it and when you exit the time. And by having this kind of tracing information, you probably get a tree that you can really then use to compute the functions per function and also the integrated data. So is it true?
Yes, absolutely.
That's cool. So that is really, really good. So, but I have another question regarding the interrupt handling. So we sometimes have load on the test. Maybe some other orphans are still running, or the operating system is doing something. So is it possible to subtract this information somehow to get the CPU use time, not the execution time?
Yes, it's a little bit complicated, but I could say that it's absolutely doable by, by registering some signal handler and to measure how much time CPU has spent to handle, the signal handler.
So, and you, what kind of signals do you receive? So you receive the starting and ending of different tasks and interrupts so that it is possible to compute the net time.
I have done some analysis, and actually, these different signals that a process would receive have different signal handlers. And of course, some signals could be ignored and just resume the, from the top of the process stack. But some signal cannot be ignored, and the signal handler would be pushed on top of the process stack, so the operating system would start to handle that signal, and then it would resume. After it's done, it would resume from your process stack. So in this case, we can actually measure some context switching for different signals. And by having, independent experiment on measuring context switching for different signals, we could build a map or a data structure of signals, let's say, to how much it would take to handle these signals. And then by combining all this information with the CPU tick measured from for the process, we could get a, I could say a noise-free.
Yeah, well, that's very, very fascinating. So you can not only measure the time per function, but also somehow get a trace what happened in the operating system. And these are all valuable data, not only, and that's the interesting thing, not only for the library, but also for further analysis of the complete system. So let's assume customer is creating some image recognition software that is using C++ template library. So then they will have a lot of software written, and they can measure the time of their software, how long it takes, but also they can use statistics from the library qualification that we provide, and that's will be very powerful. And the same probably holds for neural networks. If they want to know the how many inferences they can do per second, then they can look to the algorithm, and then they can look to the used library functions for implementing it. So this is, I think, this is really a very useful thing, and I'm really happy that you join our team and help us to get all this data for the library qualification. So thank you very much, Masud.
You're welcome, and I'm very happy to join here in Validas, and yeah, working with you nice and knowledgeable people.